So this morning we'll have our Dharma talk, and then because as the family program is also going on today at 12:15, the children will come in and share with us what they've been up to today. So today's a little different. Usually at Sunday at our Sangha, we give a Dharma talk on some relationship to the Dharma, the Buddha's teachings, and how we can understand and apply them in our lives. But because we are grateful that Buddhism doesn't contain all the wisdom of the world, but there are many other spiritual religious traditions and non-spiritual religious traditions that also have great wisdom for us. So today I will talk about the Dharma of Ebenezer Scrooge, and use Dickens' Christmas Carol not simply as it's usually presented, sort of a Christmas season, good cheer, you know, think of your fellow men, but really, I think as Dickens meant it, a paradigm for personal transformation. How each of us can come out of our self-centeredness, our miserliness, and really embrace an altruistic life. Many of us, we are working at that over decades. Ebenezer Scrooge was able to do that in one night. So let's let this be a lesson for us. For those of you who think you're not capable of doing that, just remember the story of Scrooge. So Dickens, in the 1870s, when he wrote this, there had been a report, sort of that some commission or somebody had done on the state of the working poor, especially women and children in England at the time. And it painted a very dire picture of their life. And so he was very moved by this, and he wasn't sure how to respond, you know, write an article, do something. But he decided that he would write a novella, a short book, that would be his way of awakening people to what was going on and to show them another way. So this was the basis for his creation of the Christmas Carol. So today we will read and comment, not on the whole thing, but we will take episodes, dialogue from it, to illustrate the possibility that we all have to transform, to embrace our inherent altruistic heart. Scrooge is the archetype of the totally selfish, miserly individual. You know, Dickens spends a lot of time in the opening just really showing what a miserable, self-centered creature he was. Embittered, not acknowledging at all his fellowship with other human beings, basically... just leave me alone was his basic motto in life. And so in the opening, he has kind of two encounters. One encounter is with his only family member, his nephew, the son of his sister who is dead. Who comes to pay a visit. You know, Scrooge is in his little counting house. Those of you who've seen the movie over and over, you know, huddled over. Tom Cratchit, his assistant, is there. It's cold. You know, it's a miserable environment. And then in comes the nephew, full of Christmas cheer, wishing his uncle Christmas and all that. And of course, Scrooge says his famous humbug to all that. And his nephew says, "You don't really mean that." And he says, "I do. Merry Christmas. What right have you to be merry? What reason do you have to be merry? You're poor enough." Actually, the nephew does a very good retort. He says, Uncle, what right have you to be dismal? What right have you to be morose? You're rich enough. You know, so I thought that was pretty good. Of course, all Scrooge can say is humbug. And the nephew says, "Well, Uncle, don't be so uptight or something." And he says, "What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas, out upon Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older but not an hour richer? A time for balancing your books and every item in them as round a dozen months is dead against you? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled in his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through the heart." So, you know, you get a sense of this guy. He only values one thing, money, right? And those who don't have money, there's something wrong with them. Can you see that? There's something wrong with them. And they certainly have no right to even indulge in any kind of happiness or anything at all, because the purpose of life is simply what? To have money. And so Scrooge cannot understand how anybody who doesn't have money is not solely concerned about getting money, right? We know he even resents giving a day off to his clerk, right? I mean, he begrudges a day off, a day without work. And so, again, his nephew is kind of a good guy. And he says, Uncle, there are many things from which I have derived good, but I have not profited. Christmas among them. But I've always thought of Christmas time when it come around, apart from the veneration due to its sacred name and origin, as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. I think Dickens is like kind of putting it to us. He says, the only time of the long calendar year that I know of where men and women seem by one consent to open their shut up hearts freely. I think he's trying to get us to see that this is the only time of year that we open our hearts freely. And to think of people below them as they really were fellow passengers to the grave, and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe it has done me good and will do me good, and I say God bless it. Right. So again, it's interesting. I mean, it seems like we are currently in our society, in our world, in a time where we are rediscovering what? There are still poor people. People who struggle, people, you know, all over the world, children, all kinds of people. That we most of the year forget about. So that's that. And his nephew fights him to Christmas, refuses to get sucked into his misery, and goes on his way. And then a few minutes later comes in these two gentlemen inquiring for Scrooge and Marley. Marley is his partner. Dead these 7 years. So the gentlemen say, we have no doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner. At the word liberality, Scrooge frowned, shook his head, and handed their card back. At this festive time of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision, for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessity. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts. And we know at this time of year, there is a lot of this kind of thinking of people and, you know, giving toys, giving Christmas dinner. So this type of charity, very common, right? And so Scrooge, his response to this is, and it's very contemporary. He says, are there no prisons? Plenty of prisons, say the gentlemen. And the workhouses, are they not in still operation? They are. And the poor laws, are they still vigorously enforced? Yes, they are, very busy. Oh, I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course. I am very glad to hear it. Under the impression, the gentleman replied, that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude, a few of us have come together to start a fund for the poor, to buy them some meat and drink and a means of warmth. What can we put you down for? And of course, Scrooge says, nothing. You wish to be anonymous? They quite haven't figured him out yet. And he says, I wish to be left alone. Since you asked me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. Can you feel that? Complete lack of, or the complete separation from the rest of humanity, and especially poor people, right? People who have less than him. He calls them idle people. And again, we know, you know, everything that Scrooge is saying is very contemporary. I help to support the establishments I mentioned, prisons, workhouses. They cost enough, and those who are badly off should go there. But many can't go there or would rather die. If they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. Very strong surplus population was an idea at the time. Sort of like collateral damage. Call people surplus population. Well, it's not my business to know about these people. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to fear with other people's business. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen. So Scrooge has been introduced to us, so we get a clear sense of what he's about. Has his own lonely Christmas dinner, goes home to his lonely, alone house, and we know when he goes to bed, getting ready for bed, he hears sounds, doors open, bells ring, chains are moving across the floor, and he's visited by a ghost who turns out to be the ghost of his partner, Marley, who's been dead these 7 years. And Scrooge says, dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me? Man of the earl of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not? And he's been shaking his things and doing all kinds of things. So Scrooge says, yes, I do. But why do spirits walk the earth? And why do they come to me? And the ghost says, it is required of every person that the spirit within them should walk abroad among his fellow man, travel far and wide. And if that spirit does not go forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world. Oh, woe is me! And witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth, and turn to happiness. So again, very powerful, right? That it is our duty to walk among our fellow men and women and children in this life. And here it's implied that if we don't, that will happen after death. And so Scrooge notices that he has chains around him. And Scrooge asks him, why are you chained? And again, it's a very famous line. He said, I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link, yard by yard, and I girded it on my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? Again, very powerful, right? We chain ourselves. Nobody enslaves us. It is our ideas, our thoughts, our actions of body, speech, and mind. And these are the chains that bind us, that hold us back, that separate us, that prevent us from acting in a wise and intelligent and altruistic way. And so again, implication, if you forge these chains in your life, you will be wearing them long after. Oh, would you know, said the ghost, the weight and the length of the strong coil you bear yourself. It was full as heavy and long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. This is when Marley died. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain. So again, the question for each of us to ask ourselves, what are the chains that I have forged in my life that bind me, that enslave me, that weigh me down, that are not the creation of anybody else but me, my own mind, my own thoughts, my own patterns of living, relating. But Scrooge, who sort of still can't believe that this is what's happened to his partner, he said, Jacob, you were always a good man of business. Sound familiar? Is the major criteria for judging someone? I won't go into that one. You were always a good man of business. Business, cried the ghost, wringing his hands. Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence, these were my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. Again, this is very much congruent with the way we see things. What is the purpose of life? What is the meaning of life? What is the meaning of my life? Is it just to pursue worldly goals? Or is there a deeper meaning and purpose to life, to what we're here for? It's not to say that we don't have worldly goals to pursue, but what really gives meaning and purpose? What is our business as human beings? What should we be doing, really doing, in our life? And the ghost says, at this time of year, I suffer most. Why did I walk through crowds of my fellow beings with my eyes always turned down and never raised up? Were there no poor homes to which light would have conducted me? Hear me, my time is nearly gone. I will, said Scrooge, but don't be hard upon me, Jacob. How is it, Jacob says, that I appear before you in a shape that you can see? I can't tell. So this is very unusual, he's saying, because most apparitions cannot be seen. But for some reason, Marley is allowed to appear before him, because I have sat invisible beside you many, many days. I am here tonight to warn you that you had yet a chance, a hope of escaping my fate, a chance and hope of my procuring Ebenezer. So this is why he's here, right? He's come to warn out of his compassion for his own suffering, and he sees the suffering of his partner to warn him that if you don't change your ways, you will end up like me. And it's interesting that when Marley leaves through the window, Scrooge looks out into the dark, and he sees the air is filled with phantoms, wandering hither and thither in restless haste, moaning as they went. Every one of them wore chains like Marley's. Some were linked together. None were free. Many had been personally known to Scrooge in their lives. He had been quite familiar with one old ghost in a white waistcoat with a monstrous iron safe attached to its ankle, who cried piteously at being unable to assist a wretched woman with an infant whom it saw below upon a doorstep. The misery was with them all. And though they sought now to interfere with what they saw going on in life, the people who were suffering, because they were apparitions, they had lost that power. Forever, it says. Good. So, I mean, can you see what the scene has been set? Right? We've met Scrooge. We see where he's at. We've met his ex-partner, who has now revealed to Scrooge karma. Karma. The karma that each of us forge by the actions of our body, speech, and mind. And that the actions of our body, speech, and mind do nurture and create our future, right? And so Marley has said, look at me. So very fortunate, right, that Scrooge has this living encounter with the future and has a good friend who warns him. So again, he goes to sleep, and of course, at midnight is awoken by a strange-looking spirit. The spirit of the past. See, this is very interesting, especially as a path of transformation. It's like, and I think sophisticated. See, we meet Scrooge, and we see this miserable, suffering, alienated, disconnected, angry, embittered, materialist, right? We see him, and the question is, how did he get here? You see? You know? See, this is important. How do these people become who they are manifesting? Which is for us, how did I get to where I am? So he begins with somebody who will take Scrooge on a journey to his past. This is very important. Because he doesn't just come in and kind of tell Scrooge what to do. He's taking him on a journey of, we might say, self-discovery, waking up, seeing clearly. There are a couple of strange things about this spirit. One thing, he's got this incredible bright light just pouring out of his head, right? And then he's got this cap that he puts on to cover the light. And I think it's very interesting because it's like mindfulness, it's like awareness, it's like deep looking. That is a light that if we shine it where it needs to be shined, we will see clearly what needs to be seen, right? But he's got this cap. And he says, this cap I wear because of you. You meaning all of us. Because you don't want the light to shine. So you kind of make me wear my cap. And I think it's for many of us. We don't want to look into these places. Right? We're afraid of what we might see. And if we looked where that might lead us to. So we keep, all of us keep a cap on our light. So, but he takes the light out, it's shining brightly, and he takes Scrooge on a journey. And the Scrooge asks him, why are you taking me on this journey? And he says, first, your welfare. Scrooge doesn't really respond to that. He's not somebody who really thinks about his welfare, probably doesn't think anything's wrong with him. And then the spirit says, actually, I'm here for your reclamation. And we know he's going to reclaim his humanity for him. Take heed. So he takes him on a journey to his past, and we know, and again, I'll just kind of summarize. I think most of you have probably seen the movie, read the story, but we see him as a young boy, and we see that his mother has died, and he's in a boarding school, and his father, because he sort of associates the death of his wife with, because she died at childbirth, with Ebenezer, right, Scrooge. So we see Christmas time, everybody's gone home, he remains, right? And it's interesting that Scrooge sobs. I mean, already he sobs when he sees this lonely boy. He probably never sobbed back then. Keep a stiff upper lip. But now when he sees that pitiful boy all alone on Christmas, he sobs. He sees him with his sister. She's probably the only loving person in his life. And then he sees him, he's gone to work now with Mr. Fezziwig. And it's interesting, Fezziwig is like, he's like the opposite, he's a businessman, but he's the opposite of Ebenezer. Fezziwig, he's good to his employees. He's kind to his employees. He likes to have fun with his employees. He wants them to be happy. He's nurturing. He's caring, right? And all of a sudden, it touches something in Scrooge. It's like he remembers being at that, probably he was a teenager working for Fezziwig, and how happy he was with him. And Scrooge comments to the ghost about, isn't this wonderful? They see him putting on a Christmas party and all that. And the ghost says, oh, it's a small matter to make these silly folks, all the people who work for him, so full of gratitude. Small, echoed Scrooge. The spirit signed to him to listen to the two apprentices who were pouring out their hearts in praise of Fezziwig. And when he had done so, said, why is it not? He has spent but a few pounds of your mortal money, 3 or 4 perhaps. This is like on their little Christmas bonus or something. Is that so much that he deserves praise? And then you hear Scrooge said, it isn't that. It isn't that spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in words and looks, in things so slight and insignificant that it is impossible to add and count them up. What then? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune. Wow. Just by remembering acts of kindness, by remembering acts of goodness, by remembering somebody, an employer, a businessman who did not see that it was all about money and profit, right? But so was about human beings and could so touch people. It's a good reminder to us, this capacity all of us have, wherever we are, that it's these kinds of things that are most meaningful. And then it goes on, he was engaged, we see his girlfriend, his fiancée, who had been very sweet and loving to him, now basically rejecting him because she says, I have been replaced. You know, he still wants to marry her, but she says, no, I can feel I've been replaced. And he says, replaced by what? By a golden idol. Right? She can feel. Right? And there are many people like that in our society. Right? They're focused on what? On their work. On getting ahead, on getting things done. And that is more important than the people they're in relationship with, the people they live with, right? So it's what he's talking about, you know, this is literature, so it's a little bit extreme to get us to notice, but I think he's saying something very that's meaningful for all of us. So now he's alone. He's and then actually, the Spirit really lays it on him. The last thing he does is takes him to just a couple of years ago to his fiancée, who's now remarried, has lots of children, and it's like he just kind of lets him watch how happy they are together. Right. Spirit, said Scrooge in a broken voice, remove me from this place. I told you these were shadows of the things that have been. They are what they are. Do not blame me. Remove me, Scrooge said. I cannot bear it. Haunt me, leave me. Take me back, haunt me no longer. And Scrooge noticed that the spirit's light was shining bright. Right? Everything was seen. He could not hide the light. It streamed. Even when Scrooge grabs the cap and pushes it down on him, can't take it anymore, still the light came out from underneath. So can you see a process had begun that Scrooge could not stop? Could not put it back in the bottle. So, you know, Scrooge is happy to find himself back in bed, thinks it's just a bit of indigestion. Bad dream. But we know he's been through a process. So now he's, so can you see what's going on? He's taken back and he can see the cause and effect. He can see the karma. He can see the experiences that have conditioned him, that brought him, and I'm summarizing, to where he is right now. And it awoke something in him. And for, I think, many of us in our journey who have kind of become enchained, we often need to go back. Not only for the, you know, what happened in a negative way, but to remember ourselves in our innocence, in our goodness, in our natural happiness, right? And to understand for all of us that that's where we all began, right? So Scrooge has kind of seen both, and it has awoken something in him. So next he's visited by, you know, so we've gone to the past. Now he's visited by the spirit of the present, who basically is going to take him around the world and show him positive things about life, okay? You know, all Scrooge in the present has ever seen is what? Negative. Everybody's a fool, everybody's an idiot, everybody's a jerk, you know? I mean, people like that, who think that way, right? I'm the only smart one. I'm the only one that's got it together, right? I'm the only one who's right. How did a guy like me end up in a world of jerks? And he thinks in his delusion that his is the right way, right? That his is the way of meaning, purpose. So now, because again, he's done this work in the past. He's now, if we can see, he's now a little more open. There are a little more emotions. He's feeling. He's waking up. He's noticing. And so this spirit now takes him around. Takes him just all around the town, and there's lots of description of all the goodness. There's an interesting sense where in those days, many people did not have stoves, ovens. So for poor people, if they want to cook their meat, they took them to the baker's, right? And in the baker's ovens, they would their meat would be cooked. And I guess the because of the church and the and Sunday being a day of no work, the baker's shops were all closed, so people couldn't bring their meat on Sunday. And so Scrooge, it's funny, Scrooge has now switched sides, right? He said, you would deprive them of their means of dinner every seventh day, the only day on which they could perhaps dine at all because they don't work. I, said the spirit, yeah, you seek to close those places on the seventh day. I seek? Forgive me if I'm wrong, but at least it has been done in your name, or at least in the name of your family. And then the spirit says an interesting thing, especially in our current day where we have so many religious zealots. He said, there are some upon this earth of yours, who lay claim to know us, and who do their deeds of passion, pride, ill will, hatred, envy, bigotry, and selfishness in our name. Very powerful. Because we know these days, all these kinds of negative ways of being and thinking are done these days in the name of religion. Right? So very profound what he's saying here. I mean, you know, it's interesting. Dickens gets in, his strong ideas here. They do this all in our name. But these people are as strange to us and all our kith and kin, as if our kith and kin have never lived. Remember that and charge their doings on themselves and not us. So again, I think you understand what he's getting at. He goes and visits the Cratchits. You know, this is his clerk, poor but happy. And there's Tiny Tim, who's sick. And Scrooge says, Spirit, will Tiny Tim live? The spirit says, I see a vacant seat in the corner, and a crutch without the owner. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die. No, no, says Scrooge. Oh, no, say he'll be spared. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, none other of my race will find him here. What then? If he be like to die, he'd better do it and decrease the surplus population. You know, he's kind of putting it right to him. Scrooge hung his head to hear his own words quoted by the spirit and was overcome with penitence and grief. The ghost said, man, if man you be in your heart, forbear that wicked cant until you have discovered what the surplus is and where it is. Will you decide what men shall live and what men shall die? Powerful, isn't it? In this day of violence and drones and endless war, right? Who is it who should decide who lives and dies? It may be that in the sight of heaven you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions like this poor man's child. And then he takes him all around the world. He takes him to miners. He takes him to people in lighthouses, seamen on the sea, shows Christmas spirit everywhere, takes them to his nephews. They're having a great party. Everybody's happy. Much they saw and far they went, and many homes they visited, and always with a happy end. The spirit stood beside sick beds, and they were cheer, on foreign lands, by struggling men and women, and they became patient and hopeful. He stood by people in poverty and made them rich, in almshouses, hospitals, jails. Do you remember he had this kind of little magic wand? He'd sprinkle little kind of dust on them. That was the power of the spirit of Christmas present. He could just shake his little fairy dust on them, and all their misery would be gone. In almshouses, hospitals, jails, in misery's every refuge, where vain men and women in their brief authority had not made fast the door and barred the spirit, he left his blessing and taught Scrooge his precepts. And then he's about to take leave. And Scrooge notices there's something like a foot or something or a claw sticking out from under his robes. And so Scrooge says, "What is that?" And he opens up, and there were two children, wretched, frightful, hideous, miserable, kneeling at his feet. The ghost said, "Look." They were a boy and girl, yellow, meager, ragged, scowling, wolfish, prostrate too in their humility, where graceful youth should have filled out their features and touched them with his freshest tints, a stale and shriveled hand like that of old age. No change, no degradation, no perversion of humanity in any grade, through all the mysteries of wonderful cessation, had monsters half so horrible and dread. Scrooge stared, appalled. She tried to say, "Oh, what fine children," but the words choked themselves. He was unable to be party to a lie of such magnitude. "Spirit, are they yours?" "No," the spirit says, "they are man's. And they cling to me, peeling from their fathers. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware of both of them and all their degree. And most of all, beware of this boy, for on his brow I see written which is doom unless the writing be erased. Deny it. Slander those who tell ye. Admit it for your own factious purposes and make it worse, and bide the end." So it's very powerful, you know, with all this things going on today about, you know, the school to prison pipeline and all, you know, that's what he's saying, isn't it? It's really kind of fascinating. You know, these are your children, right? And if they're growing up in ignorance or want, beware of them, right? Beware of them. It will come back. Don't deny them. Don't turn away from them, because it will come back to your own ruin. I mean, very, you know. So Scrooge cries out, "Have they no refuge or resource?" And the spirit says, "Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?" Right. Turns his own words against him. So then the ghost takes his leave. The midnight hour strikes, and he beholds the third ghost, a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming toward him. When it came up to him, Scrooge bent down his knee, for in the very air which the spirit moved, it seemed to scatter gloom and mystery. It was dark, a dark figure. This spirit does not speak. Scrooge says, "Am I in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come?" The spirit just points. "Are you just to show me what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Is this so?" He doesn't say anything. "Ghost of the future," he exclaimed, "I fear you more than any specter I have seen. But as I know your purpose is to do me good, and I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me?" No reply. "Lead on, lead on." So, it's kind of interesting. It's like, it's sort of like, for a lot of us, it's sort of like Scrooge is saying, "Well, you know, I get it. Right? And I've seen the past, I've seen what brought me here, I've seen the goodness inherent in man. I'm a changed person, right? I'm changed. Right? You don't need to bother with me, you know, I'm changed." And I think many of us stop there. We don't realize that the energy that has brought us here is still active within us. So the spirit leads him on. And he basically takes him through a series of, a bunch of businessmen, acquaintances of Scrooge, standing around talking about somebody who died. You know, and talking very negatively about the person, who wants to go to his funeral, nobody will be there, and, well, maybe if they serve some good food, maybe he'll go. I mean, just talking very negatively about the person. Scrooge can't figure out why, why he's being taken here. And then they take him to this kind of part of town where it's a kind of like a pawn shop rag thing, and there are these three people there, two women and an undertaker, and they're kind of bringing all these goods from a person who just died, his bed clothes and the drapes from his bed and the sheets and his watch, and they're talking very negatively about this miserable guy who just died by himself, never did anybody any good. At least now, since they've been able to grab his stuff, they can do some good for them. Takes him to the Cratchit's house. Tiny Tim has died, sees the family in mourning. Sees a bunch of things like that. And then Scrooge kind of says, all right, take me home. I've had enough. But the spirit doesn't take him home. He takes him to a graveyard. And he points him in the direction of a gravestone. And Scrooge says, before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point, answer me one question. And this is a very important question he's asking. Are these the shadows of the things that will be? Or are they the shadow of the things that may be only? Okay, this is very, many people believe their karma is fixed, right? When I look back and I've done this, this, and this, and this, and my capacity to change is very limited, right? Is everything that has led me to this point, does this mean this is the way things will continue or the way things might continue? Very, this is like the key question. Still the ghost pointed downward to the grave. He's not giving him an inch. And Scrooge says, men's courses will foreshadow certain ends to which, if persevered in, they must leave. But if the courses can be departed from, the ends will change. Say it thus with what you show me. So this is that very... a question really at the center of Buddhism and the capacity to awaken and to transform. If causes and conditions have created these effects, if I change the causes and conditions of my life, will this create new effects? This is the powerful question that all of us need to understand. I am only where I am today because of the causes and conditions from my past. They have brought me to this moment. But if I change the causes and conditions of my life, can I have a different future? That's the question he's asking. The spirit doesn't reply. Scrooge creeps forward and sees the name Ebenezer Scrooge on the stone. And then he realizes that the dead man that he had seen in the bed, et cetera, was him. Good spirit, he cries, your nature intercedes for me and pities me. Assure me that I may yet change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life. The hand trembled. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it in all the time in the future. I will live in the past, the present, the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone. In his agony, he caught the spectral hand. It sought to free itself, but he was strong in his entreaty and detained it. the spirit, stronger yet, repulsed him. Holding up his hands in a last prayer to have his fate reverse, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and became a bedpost. Yes, the bedpost was his own, and he was in his own room. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in. I will live in the past, present, and future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. O Jacob Marley, heaven in the Christmas time be praised. I say it on my knees, old Jacob, on my knees. He's in ecstasy because he's alive. But now he's alive, awakened. Right? He's alive, but he is awake now. He sees clearly cause and effect. He sees clearly his potential. He sees clearly what has brought him to where he is. He's seen that even though it seemed like a good life to him, it really was a life of misery, and he now knows there is another way. He's laughing. He's crying. I don't know what to do. I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. Happy. Hello, world. And he's whooping around. This is interesting. In descriptions of enlightenment experiences, this is what this is. It's like all of a sudden, he's light. All the heaviness, all the constriction is gone. Right? He's, you know, we might say reborn. He's reborn to his true self. And that manufactured self that had just caused him some misery is gone. And he's laughing, you know, he just, and then we know he just, I think the kids are coming. So he, you know, he does good, you know, brings a goose to the Cratchits, raises Cratchit's salary, says, I will be there for Tiny Tim and help you in any way you can. I'll be like a father to him, you know, runs into those two guys he wouldn't give the money to, the philanthropists in the street. Makes an incredible donation to them, goes to his nephew's house, begs forgiveness. And then it is said, Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more unto Tiny Tim, who did not die. He was a second father. He became a good a friend, as good a master, as good a man as the old city knew, or any other good old city in the whole world knew. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh, and little heeded them, for he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good at which some people did not have their fill of laughter in the outset. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins as have the malady in less attractive forms. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. So I think, so this is the Dharma of Scrooge. I think it's a very powerful tale for all of us.